Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
This season, Instacart has your back to school. As in, they've got your back to school lunch favorites like snack packs and fresh fruit. And they've got your back to school supplies like backpacks, binders, and pencils. And they've got your back when your kid casually tells you they have a huge school project due tomorrow. Let's face it, we were all that kid. So first, call your parents to say, I'm sorry. And then download the Instacart app to get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes all school year long. Get a $0 delivery fee for your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H Town. Let's get their work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Day 6 of Texans training camp, and we are here live at the Methodist Training Center, sitting right at the 50-yard line. They got the lights on the field right now. This is a vibe out here, man.
You know, one thing our engineer, Aaron Raybould, noticed the other day was that the guy that paints the numbers, he does them by hand.
No way.
He doesn't use a stencil.
Just the numbers.
Not by hand, like with a brush.
Yeah.
He's got the spray thing, but he does it freehand.
Oh, man. He's an artiste.
Yes.
Oh, man. Does he do the Gothic H by hand as well?
No, I don't think so.
That would be impressive.
Probably not. If they stick with that font for a while, he might get to the point where he can do it by hand.
Maybe.
And then I talked to one of the other grounds crew guys. They said that when they line all 3 fields, because I'm watching these guys work the other day, and it was a sunny day, and like they're working up a ladder, you know?
Absolutely.
He said it's 5.7 miles. When they do all 3 fields.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they get they're walking the whole time, right?
Yeah.
So they're
in a good clip.
They're getting their steps in.
For like several days worth.
Yeah, man.
Well, I guess not. But still, it's a lot all at once in the heat.
How you feeling?
I feel good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to calm down a little bit.
Why?
You know, I get a little bit hyper whenever we transition. The first day of camp, I was giving you had to sit there and listen to me do like 4-minute monologues that were way too fast and way too fragmented.
I think that's your
disjointed.
Deal, though, man. That's kind of your thing.
Yeah, but you got to temper it a little bit, Sean.
Little bit,
you got to temper it a little bit. So they were in pads yesterday.
Yeah.
So I got excited again, this occurred to me last night. Is football the only sport where it becomes more manly when you put a bunch of pads on? Like, it's like, you know, rock climbing, you're like, wow, oh my gosh, he did it without a rope.
Yeah.
Walking a tightrope with no net underneath. Football, it's like, it's time to get real. We're going to strap a bunch of padding on you.
Cover ourselves in 5 layers of pads and let's go. Yeah.
And we'll give you a big, I guess, hockey. Aaron made a good point. Hockey. Hockey is one that definitely is and that's a very manly sport.
What'd you think of the first day in pads yesterday?
I thought it was good. I thought it was crisp. There weren't a whole lot of pileups or anything. There weren't too many. As D'Amico pointed out afterwards, you don't want guys taking shots at guys from the side or anything like that, but you want them to thud them up. I did. On one of the collisions, it was on the far side of the field where somebody did go to the ground. I do think Lonnie Johnson was involved.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was. It was him. Okay.
Yeah, he was.
But I don't know if it was an irresponsible
that too,
one or not.
A tradition, yes.
Yeah, but I'm excited to watch Lonnie Johnson and see how he does. You know, he's been to a couple of teams since the Texans. But overall, I'd say the big three things were, and first and foremost, I think the offense with pads on, so with the ability for the offensive line to thump a little bit and stand up to some of these bull rushes they've been facing from defensive linemen, and then just with more of a genuine threat of the run, it opened things up. And it was one of those really good training camp practices where I think the offense did well in the red zone. All the teamwork was down in the red zone.
Yeah.
That's another key, too, because then the defense, like, you know, in training camp, the defensive backs and the back seven sometimes are a little bit more psychologically geared towards stopping the pass. You get down to the goal line, and it's like, no, we just don't want to let them score.
Right.
So you're getting a true read, and yeah. I think that helped the offense out a lot. So the offensive line looked better, but it was one of those good days in camp where it was more a matter of, I think, CJ making some really good throws and Stephon Diggs making some really nice catches, more so than it was about the defense getting torched or something.
Yeah.
Now, Stephon Diggs was wide open for that fade.
He was. On Derek, yeah, he missed Stingley right over here near where we're sitting right now. But, man, that, like, I think we can all agree Monday was not a great day for the offense. That was their worst day of camp so far, two days ago. And then yesterday was almost like the offense's revenge down in the red zone. And, like, the salvo came with the very first play. Right in front of us, in front of the bubble over there, CJ with a perfect throw, Stingley with really good coverage, and Stephon Diggs with a toe tapper in the back corner of the end zone.
Right. So, you know, it was a ball placement specialist day for
Big
CJ.
Time.
It was one of those things
Big
where
time.
He was throwing into tight windows or putting the perfect touch on the ball. So, first big takeaway was ball placement specialist.
Yep.
CJ Stroud was in the house, and Stephon Diggs was awesome.
He was great.
Second takeaway would be that I was pleased with the way the offensive line played.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think the defensive line was trash or anything. I think they just did a good job of, even when there was push by the defensive line, it was a tight, compressed NFL pocket, and CJ operated from that compressed pocket really well. As long as he had room to throw, he was okay. And then the third takeaway was simply that, man, the tight ends got involved. The tight ends, everybody who wasn't Dalton, well, the names we know, everybody who wasn't Dalton Schultz because he wasn't out there scored a touchdown. Brevin Jordan scored a touchdown. Tegan Quatoriano scored a touchdown. And Cade Stover scored a touchdown.
Yeah, they did. Now, to be clear, Schultz was in uniform yesterday, but I don't think he was doing teamwork.
Wasn't participating.
Yeah, I only point that out because there's levels of guys who haven't been out here. Joe Mixon wasn't out here at all yesterday.
Yeah.
Christian Harris wasn't out here at all yesterday. Schultz was in uniform yesterday, but I think you're right. I didn't notice him during any of the team drills down in the red zone. So you're right. It was really good work. Kate, it was really cool. Like, they were mixing a lot of the backup guys in with CJ in red zone. Like, Kate Stover was in there. Steven Sims is in there with him at one point.
It was kind of nice to see some of the starters out.
Yeah.
With Nico Collins out.
Nico had a Veterans Day off.
Yeah.
He's healthy, so no worries there.
And it wasn't clear exactly why John Metchie was out, but D'Amico seemed to say it was no big deal afterwards. So.
Yeah,
he referenced the GPS tracking and everything, all the data they use can kind of get a feel for when a guy might be at risk of injury.
That's wild.
Like, if he's running his routes a little bit slower, and this is speculation by me, but D'Amico's talking about it in general.
Yeah.
That they can get a feel for, like, all right, we need to sit this guy for a day.
Yeah, and Metchie would be a logical one to maybe still, you know, handle with kid gloves a little bit. I don't know. So, good day out here yesterday. A lot of red zone work. The McNairs spoke yesterday, Cal and Hannah, and the big question for them was, what about the roof of the stadium over there? Because it lost a bunch of panels during Beryl. And apparently, Cal had a funny line. He's like, well, these aren't exactly panels you can get at your do-it-yourself stores.
Right.
You know, they got to special order these things. So the stadium isn't going to be repaired until, he said, a month into the season.
Yeah, it's not like going out and getting a part for a mass-manufactured vehicle.
Correct.
Where there's thousands and thousands of those parts out there.
Yeah.
It's the exact same. That's why they don't – that's why you know what? That's why they stopped running the Concorde. The old supersonic jet. Yes, it was exactly. It was because there were only a few of them. You can't go supersonic over land. So it was a matter of, like, it was so expensive and so labor-intensive, and just you'd have to create materials for it. It just didn't make sense economically.
So NRG Stadium is the Concord, is what
it's
I'm
the
hearing.
Concord.
It's basically
right.
the Concord of stadiums.
But without a stupid, weird nose on it.
Right, exactly.
Concord, dumbest nose on an airplane ever.
Ever. Yeah. But if you're a fan and you're listening, if you're a season ticket holder or you're a fan driving here for practice and you go to games, it's not going to change the dynamic of the game. They don't have to leave the roof open for games, is what Cal was saying. They can still close the roof. There'll just be a couple holes in it.
They're going to have some garbage bags taped together with duct tape
we're gonna have a
window on our car.
We're going to be a bit of a trashy franchise for about a month. Okay?
We're going to be a bit like you were when things were kind of tough and you're like, oh, God, I got to drive this thing without a window for at least 3 months.
Right. It's like NRG Stadium had a break-in or something like that, and we're just going with duct tape and cellophane
they
on the roof.
They can't cry poverty, though, because they did sell out all the season tickets.
That was big news yesterday,
man. For the first time since 2019.
He was walking around very happy about that, as he should, yesterday.
I first read it from Ian Rappaport, actually, who I must need a little bit more sleep, because the way he worded it awkwardly, and he said for the first time since 2019, the Texans have sold out all of their 2024 regular season tickets. And I'm like, were they in the habit of selling out tickets for 2024 like in previous years before that?
Oh, I feel
like it was like
the
current
year. Wording.
I don't like it when these little college bros that went to school that type stuff into their phones. It's one sentence, Ian. Get your crap straight.
Clean it up. Now, what the Texans would want to make very clear is they are not sold out of tickets. They've sold out their season ticket allotment. So there are still single-game tickets available for all the games.
Okay.
There's like 90% of the stadium is set aside for season ticket holders. And then they've got the other 10% that there's still tickets here and there that you can get tickets for just by going to the Texans website. So that was cool. So they sold out all those games. The enthusiasm of the ticket sales is reflective in the enthusiasm that was out here at Texans training camp yesterday.
Yeah, there's
people flooding into the place.
What's kind of nice about it too is that, yes, there are some like bona fide superstars in the making with C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, but even compared to back in 2011. And, you know, that 2012 season, it was just mayhem out here. People were so excited.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of that was driven by a few guys, I think, in J.J. Watt, Andre Johnson, Arian Foster, in terms of just total star power.
Star power, yeah.
But there's a more evenly distributed group of names across the top of the roster. But also,
this is a deep team.
And I think this is a difference from some of the previous more competitive Texans teams. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to have more depth throughout.
Yeah.
I mean, that was always the problem with those teams when they were really good, but they were top heavy. You know, and yet remember Andre said that he had a premonition that 2013 might be so hot because he looked around and he saw so many starters playing special teams.
Yeah.
They didn't have enough guys on the team that could be respectable special teams players. Where here I think you've got actually quality special teamers who are going to get cut off of this team.
Rick Smith, the GM back then, had a real knack for evaluating talent at the upper level.
Yeah.
He was really good in the first round.
That's what
kept him his job for many, many years, is they had an upper level of players that were all former first rounders. I think Nick, and I'll add D'Amico in there too, because he obviously has input, I think they're just better at evaluating the guys on the margins.
You know, I remember,
they don't have nearly the issues in the third round that Rick Smith had in the third round back in the day.
You know what I'll add to that? Joe Marciano, the original special teams coach here, he was widely respected as a special teams coach, and he was a very good coach. He would get lambasted by fans here eventually because the special...
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Push the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Teams wasn't performing, but it really was that he didn't have the talent that he'd had at other places. And I remember talking to Joe once, long after he'd been gone from the Texans. He wasn't, you know, talking smack while he was here, but I had a conversation with him about how he seemed to think that, like, defensive-minded head coaches tend to care more about special teams because it's what they do.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole lot of tackling. It's the same mentality. It's everything else like that. So at least part of it might also be that, yeah, look, D'Amico's a guy that appreciates special teams play.
They work it a lot at these practices.
Bill O'Brien, they had good special teams when he was here too. So,
yep.
But well, when he went out and got Bill O'Brien going out and getting Frank Ross is really maybe one of the best things that Bill O'Brien has done for this franchise.
Yep.
Because that's Frank Ross is the guy that kept this team from being one of the worst teams in football, really. Because they were really, really bad offensively. They weren't that hot offensively, but the special teams was good enough that it kept them in the mix.
Really, really good. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Astros lose last night, by the way, 8-2 to the A's. So just an abysmal series so far in Oakland. They remain in first place by percentage points over the Seattle Mariners, who continue to play this week even worse than the Houston Astros. They lost to the Angels last night. We'll have all that for you in headlines coming up at 6:45. A reminder, Nick Caserio, joining us out here at 7:30 today. Live on set, he will be with us 7:30 till the top of the hour in the 7 o'clock hour, so stay tuned for that as well. The biggest story so far at Texans training camp for me, everybody who went to the podium yesterday had an answer about him. We will talk about it, tell you who it is, coming up next.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. This season, Instacart has your back to school. As in, they've got your back to school lunch favorites like snack packs and fresh fruit. And they've got your back to school supplies like backpacks, binders, and pencils. And they've got your back when your kid casually tells you they have a huge school project due tomorrow. Let's face it, we were all that kid. So first, call your parents to say, I'm sorry. And then download the Instacart app to get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes all school year long. Get a $0 delivery fee for your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Texans Training Camp. Live from the Houston Methodist Training Center. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, great to be with you, Payne and Pendergast, live at Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne, Nick Caserio joins us in about an hour and 10 minutes. Be ready.
Oh.
Be ready, okay. Buddy.
He gave me a reminder yesterday.
Yeah.
I was standing on the sideline. He walked past me. He's like, hey, are ready to see you tomorrow? Or I'll see you tomorrow? I was like, what are you talking about?
He told me.
He said, yeah.
He said, I told Seth, I'll see you tomorrow. He looked a little surprised.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remembered. I remembered Sean after a spell. I told him, I was like, you're better than my dentist sending out the reminder text.
That's
you
great.
And Dr. Waheed.
That's
you're the people that keep me on track in Houston.
The two most thorough people in your life.
Ironically enough, Dr. Waheed, my dentist, was introduced to me by the original GM, Charlie Casserly.
No kidding.
Charlie Casserly says, Seth, you got to go to Dr. Waheed. He's a great guy.
Oh, just says,
yeah.
And you've got great teeth.
Oh,
That's a nice endorsement for Dr. Waheed,
Dr. Waheed's daughter now, too, works for him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, this is a generational thing here in
family
Houston.
Family business. So,
longtime Houstonians know the lineage that is the Charlie Casserly, Dr. Waheed, Seth
Payne. Oh, it's legendary.
Connection, yes.
It's legendary. Speaking of legendary, actually, no, I don't like using that word. Speaking of being the story of training camp, so far, I think to me, we're five practices in. So you know what I do, Seth. I'm like, all right, what's the biggest thing here? Let's power rank the stories. I'm not going to do a power ranking, but I think Stephon Diggs has been the biggest story of training camp so far.
I think so. I think that, and for all the right reasons.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of reservation, perhaps, about how he'd fit in, you know, how he'll handle, you know, being one of many targets, all of that. And, you know, frankly, we still haven't seen that.
We
That's
don't
something
know.
That plays out during the
we
season.
Don't know. Yeah.
But in terms of him, in his willingness to, or I guess his eagerness to be a mentor to younger guys, but then also for whatever reservations you might have about, okay, has he lost a step on his deep speed because he's an older guy? Frankly, with this complement of wide receivers, I don't care because he is such a nasty route runner. It's cool.
It's, crazy,
it's really cool to watch him just kind of violently get it in and out of his breaks on his double moves. I try to cover him in my mind, Sean. I put myself kind of like in the body of a guy that runs a 4.3 40 and everything.
Yeah.
And he gets me every time. Yeah. I'm ashamed to say he's burned me a few times this camp.
Virtual reality world, he burns you all the time. You've had a bad camp against him.
I know. Yeah. I'm kind of fighting for my life here.
So Diggs has been, like the physical part of it has stood out. The leadership part of it has really stood out. Every single player that goes to the podium gets asked about Stephon Diggs. Here was Jalen Petrie yesterday talking about Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, he's a true leader, I think, on and off the field. You know, he's came to me, you know, I work with him a lot in the slot. And he's came to me and just tried to give me a couple pointers here and there. And I think the biggest thing is his competitive nature is high. Like, he's going out every play trying to win, and that does nothing but, you know, uplift other competitors, because when I'm out there, I don't care who it is. Like, I'm trying to win as well. So that's not going to do nothing but help get this team even better.
Yeah, that iron sharpens iron thing. Diggs is out there sharpening all kinds of iron because he's got Petrie in the slot sometimes.
Yeah.
He's been running routes on the outside against Kamari Lassiter. He's helping a lot of guys
honestly
get better.
The cool thing about watching this in the totality of it all is watching all this competition between really good players. And you just think about, okay, how does that compound over time? It's not just like you're going to some camp on the weekend and you face a couple of good dudes and you get better because of that. It's every day. So, like, anybody who's ever played a sport knows, like, if you play up a level, all of a sudden, up an age group, man, you get a whole lot better. In wrestling, that's huge. If you're training with a guy who's a really good wrestler every single day, you get a damn hell of a lot better. So for these young guys, especially like Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock and everybody else, they're able to see not just the starters, but, you know, John Metchie has turned into that guy that's a very good route runner and more explosive. So that's been really nice to see. And then, you know, as Lassiter said, it's also, well, we'll play that audio later. Lassiter has a really good point about that.
Yeah, well, let's skip down to it right now. Ben, let's go to Lassiter 4 here, talking about
14.
14.
So don't.
You're talking about going against Stroud. Okay, this is just sticking with Diggs for another couple minutes. This is Lassiter talking about the dynamic with him and Diggs at practice.
I'm the type of guy, like, I just stand on business. So, like, if it's smoke in the air, I'm going to blow it. But Diggs, he's just a guy who he really loves the game. So, I mean, he's just really passionate about what he does, and he just lets it be known. And I like that because I'm the same way. So, I mean, when I make a play, I'm going to let you know. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And he's the same way. So whenever he makes a play, I give him credit. But I'm like, okay, yeah. Next time, it's going to be different.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. A rookie going after a 10-year guy.
Yeah. No, Kamari Lassiter, in that longer version of that bite, he kind of says, and I'm glad they cut it down, because he kind of says, like, hey, I don't say much and everything. But, yeah, when something happens, I'm going to let you know about it.
Yeah.
But he kind of contradicted himself.
Yeah, I know. I don't say much, but allow me to talk for 90 seconds extemporaneously.
But I think that, again, I've seen steady progress out of Lassiter. And Lassiter, I think, like, it's fine to have concerns about his top-end speed, his recovery speed, and everything like that. With guys who excel at anticipation, there's going to be a breaking-in period because he's learning how to anticipate these routes that are just run by some really good route runners. Tank Dell's just damn near impossible to figure out sometimes because his body moves in ways that other human beings' bodies don't move. Stephon Diggs runs routes better than just about everybody else that Lassiter might see in any given NFL season. And not a single college player, no matter how good he is, runs routes as well as a whole bunch of pros do.
That's right.
It's just a matter of those guys coming up and, you know, iron sharpening iron in the league. So for a guy like Lassiter, there's going to be times where when anticipation is one of the things he's really good at, until he gets that anticipation up to speed, yeah, there's going to be times where he gets beat and doesn't look like he can recover and everything. Those instances have gotten fewer and fewer over the first 5 days of camp.
Yeah, let's Ben, let's skip down to Lassiter 14 and stick with Kamari here, because he met with the media yesterday. He was on In the Loop yesterday as well, if you want to go find that interview. He was really good yesterday with the fellas. But this is Lasseter talking about going against a quarterback like C.J. Stroud on a day-to-day basis.
Man, it just makes me so much better because it's like my technique has to be sound every play, you know, because it's two-on-one. I'm one-on-one with the receiver, and then I got another matchup with a quarterback, and the quarterback is elite. So just knowing that if I make one wrong step or if I think too long, you know, the rep might be over. Because whoever I'm going against, whether it's Steph, Nico, Tank, Mechie, Noah, it doesn't matter. Like, those guys are elite, so I have to be elite at the same time.
That's the exponential effect of having good players on your team. Obviously, having good players on your team helps you those 17 Sundays throughout the year. The more talent you have, the more games you're going to win. But in training camp, you know, the fact that Kamari Lasseter is going against receivers like that and not going against, you know, the receivers from 3 years ago.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
It's like going against Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell, and Nico Collins every day in practice versus going against Chris Moore, Chris Conley, and, you know, 32-year-old Danny Amendola.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, and honestly, like, what he's talking about there, too, is, you know, for every rookie, it's kind of a welcome to the NFL moment as they learn how quickly these windows close and everything. With quarterbacks, we talk about that all the time, how quickly the windows close. I think with defensive backs, it's like how little window they need, how little window the receivers actually need, that if you're playing against a quarterback like C.J. Stroud, mm-hmm. especially, like there's a lot of times, you know, going back to the DeAndre Hopkins days, just covering a guy isn't enough. Right. It's not enough to have the guy covered.
Yep.
You've got to be blanketed on him, and you got to know the exact angles and exactly the timing of the ball coming out. So that's just ramping up, I think, the development of a lot of these young guys.
Yeah, for sure.
It's really, man, it's just really cool to be out here and watch a team operate like this with this many wide receivers and with a quarterback like C.J. Stroud. It's just I've had the most fun I've had watching a training camp in a long time.
Yeah.
Because you don't see things like this on any given NFL team. We haven't seen it like this with this type of array of wide receivers ever. I mean, it doesn't happen. You don't tend to have three A-caliber receivers on any given team in the NFL.
You don't, and the Texans never have. The Texans have, I don't know that the Texans have ever had two receivers
right.
like that until last year, but none of us were expecting that.
And
Tank.
DeAndre and Will Fuller, DeAndre and Will Fuller were kind of, but that wasn't, Fuller never really truly developed into what his potential was because of injuries.
Yeah.
But at the very least, he opened things up for DeAndre Hopkins, but it wasn't it's almost artful the way everything meshes together with what Bobby Slowick can do with these guys.
Yeah, even Andre and DeAndre Hopkins were teammates for 2 years, but you got Andre's last great season with DeAndre's rookie season, and you got DeAndre's first great season with Andre's 900-yard
season. Right, and DeAndre took a year to really get up to speed. You know, he wasn't a full-time starter in that first season.
Yeah, man, yeah. It's cool to see. Hey, let's, as long as we got a few more minutes here, Ben, let's get back up to Howard 6. You talked about the offensive line looking better with pads on than they've looked in the first three or four practices. Here was Titus Howard, who met with the media yesterday, saying that the O-line is coming together.
Pretty good, man. LT's doing really good. I think it's just taking him with his stuff a little different, but LT's doing great. It's in great shape, feeling good. But as far as last year, man, and this year, I just think like the depth of guys that we got on this team is very high. We got a lot of guys that can play some football. And, you know, we got the Rook Fisher coming in. Man, we've been pouring into him. He's getting better every day. So he's learning a lot from me and LT. And, you know, he's going to be a great player himself, too. So I feel like we got a great roster. And they built the best O-line they can build. And I think, you know, we just got to continue to work. Like I said, work every day, get better. You know, every day ain't probably going to be ups and downs. We just got to steadily keep climbing. And when week one comes, we're going to put it all together.
Sean, let me paint you a picture. For our texter,
paint me a picture.
For our
yes.
texter who always wants us to paint a picture. Yeah. So yesterday, the first team offense is up on the line, and you've got on defense, Will Anderson is playing left defensive end, and Daniil Hunter is playing right defensive end. Those guys have flip-flopped some, but that's how it was yesterday. On the offensive line, at right tackle, you have Titus Howard. At left tackle, you've got rookie Blake Fisher.
Yeah.
And it was nice because they could slide the protection towards Blake Fisher and Daniil Hunter and give him a little bit of help, you know. And I didn't when I could see from where I was and when I was watching, It wasn't like Blake Fisher was being tasked with going one-on-one with Danielle Hunter all the time. You know, and usually the way D'Amico likes to do it is their game planning against, like, the defensive coordinator versus offensive coordinator in these periods. So Bobby doesn't care about, like, in that moment, just, okay, on this play I want to see exactly what Blake Fisher can do versus Danielle Hunter. They want to score a touchdown. So they do what they would do in a game, which is help Blake Fisher out a little bit, because we can trust Tytus Howard out on Will Anderson. And It worked pretty well for them yesterday.
Yeah.
The defensive line had some wins, but I think all in all, the pass protection was pretty good.
Yeah, it was good to see, man. And Blake Fisher's getting an early education here. He's not going against Jordan Jenkins like it would have been in 2021.
Right,
he's going against Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson.
Yeah, and, coaches always say immediately after the practice, you got to watch the film first and everything. And I'd say the same, except we don't get to watch the film of practice. But from what I could see, I thought Blake Fisher held up pretty well to the physical play, and that was my question. I thought that, man, in no pads, I thought he looked athletic enough. It looked like he had sound enough technique to stay in front of Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter a bunch of the time. But I was, he's a big, tall guy that plays with a higher pad level. How's he going to adapt to the power? I didn't see anything glaring when I was able to watch him yesterday.
That's good to hear. All right, let's get to headlines in the next segment here. So you heard from some of the Texans on Stephon Diggs. Diggs is the biggest story out here at training camp so far to me. And if you're coming to practice today, keep an eye on number one. He was fantastic yesterday. Looking forward to seeing a lot of the fans out here again today. Weather clearing up a little bit, but we know it's going to be a little up and down throughout the rest of the week, so drive safe out there. Headlines coming up next. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans on at least one of the absences from practice yesterday. Big news with the Texans in the business office as well, and the Astros lose again last night. We got a lot to get to in headlines, and we got stuff from around the NFL as well. We'll rapid fire all of it coming up next.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, it is headline time, 6:45 in the morning, and we are at Texans training camp, and we are live. Nick Caserio going to join us in about 45 minutes or so live out here, 7:30. Be listening for that. Day five yesterday, first string offense cooked in the red zone drills, as we just got done talking about. Offense looked really good, looked completely different than they did on Monday when they seemed out of sync. Nico Collins with a veteran day off yesterday. You could tell he had a veteran's day off, Seth. A, he was out here. He wasn't in the building with a lot of the guys who are banged up right now just don't even come out to the practice facility. B, he was wearing a jersey of his own jersey. I feel like if you were hurt, might be a little less lighthearted about your absence. I thought it was funny that he was wearing his own shirt.
He looks like a fan of Nico Collins.
He did. I was joking on my podcast yesterday. I said I'd like to envision Nico actually not having that shirt in his closet, but he ran to the team store right before practice, and they're like, "Sir, you are a big Nico Collins fan, aren't you?"
They could do one of those little bits where he sells Nico Collins jerseys to people. Problem is, he's so big that people would get onto that. It's better when you do it with a guy like Danny Amendola or something, So I think that with Nico, Nico has been, he's one of these guys that through that whole process of getting a new contract, he said all the right things publicly. He, told on that TJ Houshmandzadeh podcast, said he just flat out wasn't thinking about it at all, didn't put anything out on social media. I think he's got the humility of having had a rough go of it the first couple seasons.
No doubt.
And of having seen the other side of it, that he's one of the guys, especially because it's a relatively short-term extension that he signed, that he's already, it looked too lofty at first, but as we expected, he's already, getting pushed down. It's not like he's one of the highest paid receivers in the league anymore.
He's heading towards bargain status.
Yeah. So I think it feels good that he's just a guy that's very workmanlike in his approach. I don't think he's ever going to be the guy this jersey aside that's going to have, you know, be wearing T-shirts with his own
picture on it. I think he was doing it ironically, probably. So here was D'Amico, though. He was asked about that. Like, is this going to be a thing now with getting guys some rest and managing them throughout camp?
Every player is different. Every player is on their own schedule. It's all about us making sure we're taking care of guys and being smart about how we're loading guys. So our sports performance group has done a great job with that load management, making sure we're on top of everything. You know, we track a lot of data, right? Use a lot of analytics when it comes to players and, you know, TPS units and things that we're tracking. So we try to keep a good, we know where our guys are. So you'll see periodically different guys who are in, guys that are limited at practice, just to make sure we're doing everything possible from our end to protect guys, to keep them fresh.
There's a really cool parallel you can draw between D'Amico Ryans and Jeff Luhnow. And, like, obviously a whole lot of differences as well, different sports, different personalities, whatever. But the fact that Luhnow was a player who was playing as analytics was becoming the thing.
You're thinking of A.J. Hinch.
Yes, A.J. Hinch. Yeah. Excuse me. Thank you, Sean.
No problem.
What the hell would I do without you? My God, people are probably so confused right there. So
I was waiting for the Luhnow D'Amico comparison.
Why did you not correct me?
Because I thought you might have meant Luhnow, too. You said he as a player.
Luhnow probably, he played in high school, I'm sure. Yeah. So A.J. Hinch as a player, you know, was playing well. Analytics were becoming a thing. And, you know, A.J. Hinch actually spent some time in the front office, too. But he's acquainted with both worlds. And I think that was one of the values of having A.J. Hinch as your manager, was he is a guy who embraced what the front office was doing, but he could still relate to the players as a former player. Mm-hmm. And it was a really good blend for what that team needed. I think with D'Amico, look, he started off in 2006 where, you know, he was with a coach in Gary Kubiak that came from that Bill Walsh line where they weren't trying to physically batter you in practice. They were a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of all of that. But, you know, we had a lot more two-a-days. There was a lot more old-school NFL. And then, as a player, he transitioned into when people started wearing GPS units and everything. And so I don't think he's not a grudging participant in some of the load management stuff.
Right.
I think he sees the value in it.
Well, I think a tip of the cap, too, to Chip Kelly, who D'Amico played for in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
When D'Amico did his introductory press conference, he listed all the coaches he played for and what he pulled from each of them. I think there were probably some people surprised he named Chip Kelly because it didn't end well for Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. But D'Amico said Chip Kelly was the guy that he saw how he was an innovator
He really was at the cutting edge in terms of NFL teams when they started doing a lot of stuff that, like, European sports have been doing for a long time, of really paying a lot of attention to the sports science side of things. The one objection I have to that is that, just in general, Chip Kelly's offenses are just awful for the defense. Defense he had in the NFL was, like, in the top three of snaps played.
Yeah.
And guys would just get worn down by the end of the year. But other than that, I'll credit Chip Kelly.
There you go. Season tickets sold out for the Texans for the first time since 2019. So that was good to see. Let's flip to the Astros here because we got a lot of headlines we got to hit here. Astros lose 8-2 last night to the Oakland A's. Tough one for Jake Bloss in his, I believe, third career start, major league start.
Yeah.
And just gave up a bunch of home runs, and as Joe Espada said after the game, just couldn't put guys away.
You know what? He got ahead of hitters, threw a ton of strikes, just had a little tough time putting guys away. I think that was the, you know, the whole thing about Jake today, but, you know, stuff looked pretty good. Just needed to execute when, you know, two strikes.
Yeah. I mean, I think these last couple of games have been a very appropriate, stark, and well-timed reminder that Dana Brown needs to do something between now and next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Spencer Arrighetti a couple nights ago was not great, and then Jake Bloss last night. These are your fourth and fifth starters right now. It's not even a six-man rotation, and these guys are getting important starts in a pennant race
These are guys that should still be down in AAA.
You're
watching the A's who have been actually brilliant offensively over the course of the last month. You might not realize that if you're checked out on, you know, watching these late games or what have you.
They beat the Phillies 18-3 a
right.
week ago.
Yeah, they've been really, really
eight
good.
Home runs.
They got this damn kid Lawrence, where you look at the A's and Lawrence Butler. They're starting to reap the benefits of having been a bad team for a few years. Like, some of these Lawrence Butler's only been up for a couple of, I think, 5 weeks or so,
yeah.
And he's hitting the ball really well. Meanwhile, the Astros, it used to be like, oh, they got too many guys in AAA that could be up here now. What are we going to do with them?
Right.
Now it's like, okay, well, no, we got to elevate these guys quickly. I had a flashback to 2014 because I'm sitting there complaining about Gary Pettis sending Alex Bregman home.
Oh, back
not,
when that
not
was
that it would have been Bregman.
No.
You remember when the Astros first started being aggressive in their base running?
Yes, I do.
And Bregman got thrown at home by a great throw by Butler.
Yeah.
And they're losing to the A's.
That was a tone setter in that game last night, yeah. Man. That was the first inning.
Obviously, it wouldn't have been Bregman.
But Pettis would have been. He would have been windmilling somebody home back then. Our baseball talk presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile. You get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at t-mobile.com/switch. Other things going on in the NFL as we wrap up headlines here for the next couple of minutes. Discussions have reportedly begun at a, quote, high level on an 18-game regular season schedule. So this sounds like something that the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, is not set to expire until, I believe, after the 2030 season.
Yeah.
But this sounds like something that both sides are willing to open up the books for, to the owners obviously wanting the 18th regular season game because of the moolah, but the players wanting to use this as an opportunity. They figure this 18th regular season game is a chance for them to engage the owners about like six other things.
You're right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Yeah. Like, fine, you get the 18th game, but we don't want OTAs anymore. We want another bye week. We want this. We want that.
Yeah,
you know, et cetera.
And the NFL owners continue to position themselves in a place where they can grudgingly give away a bunch of stuff that they don't actually care about.
Right.
So the
good acting job.
It does.
By
it
then.
Really feels like yeah. it. Sometimes it feels when the NFL is negotiating with the players, it's kind of like, well, I'd love to give you this rusty penny for that dollar bill, but I really love this rusty penny.
I love this penny.
The other thing, though, too, is that, like, at the end of the day, the players are getting more money, too.
For sure.
Whenever a player gets up and says, like, it's
coming together.
Pretty good, man. LT's doing really good. I think it just taking him, his stuff a little different, but LT's doing great. He's in great shape, feeling good. But as far as last year, man, and this year, I just think, like, the depth of guys that we got on this team is very high. We got a lot of guys that can play some football. And, you know, we got the Rook Fisher coming in. Man, we've been pouring into him. He's getting better every day. So he's learning a lot from me and LT. And, you know, he's going to be a great player himself, too. So I feel like we got a great roster. And they built the best O-line they can build. And I think, you know, we just got to continue to work. Like I said, work every day, get better. You know, every day ain't gonna be perfect. Gonna be ups and downs. We just gotta steadily keep climbing. And when week one comes, we're gonna put it all together.
Sean, let me paint you a picture for our texter.
Paint me a picture
for
yes.
our texter who always wants us to paint a picture.
Yeah.
So yesterday, the first team offense is up on the line, and you've got on defense, Will Anderson is playing left defensive end, and Danielle Hunter is playing right defensive end. Those guys have flip flopped some, but that's how it was yesterday on the offensive line. At right tackle, you have Titus Howard. At left tackle, you've got rookie Blake Fisher.
Yeah.
And it was nice because they could slide the protection towards Blake Fisher and Danielle Hunter and give them a little bit of help. You know, and I didn't, when I could see from where I was and when I was watching, it wasn't like Blake Fisher was being tasked with going one-on-one with Danielle Hunter all the time. You know, and usually the way D'Amico likes to do it is their game planning against, like, the defensive coordinator versus offensive coordinator in these periods. So Bobby doesn't care about, like, in that moment, just, okay, on this play, I want to see exactly what Blake Fisher can do versus Danielle Hunter. They want to score a touchdown. So they do what they would do in a game, which is help Blake Fisher out a little bit because we can trust Titus Howard out on Will Anderson. And it worked pretty well for them yesterday.
Yeah.
The defensive line had some wins, but I think all in all, the pass protection was pretty good.
Yeah, it was good to see, man. And Blake Fisher's getting an early education here. He's not going against Jordan Jenkins like it would have been in 2021.
Right,
he's going against Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson.
Yeah, and coaches always say immediately after the practice, you got to watch the film first and everything. And I'd say the same except we don't get to watch the film of practice. But from what I could see, I thought Blake Fisher held up pretty well to the physical play, and that was my question. I thought that, man, in no pads, I thought he looked athletic enough. It looked like he had sound enough technique to stay in front of Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter a bunch of the time. But I was, you know, he's a big, tall guy that plays with a higher pad level, how's he going to adapt to the power? I didn't see anything glaring when I was able to watch him
yesterday. That's good to hear. All right, let's get to headlines in the next segment here. So you heard from some of the Texans on Stephon Diggs. Diggs is the biggest story out here at training camp so far to me. And if you're coming to practice today, keep an eye on number one. He was fantastic yesterday. Looking forward to seeing a lot of the fans out here again today. Weather clearing up a little bit, but we know it's going to be a little up and down throughout the rest of the week, so drive safe out there. Headlines coming up next. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans on at least one of the absences from practice yesterday. Big news with the Texans in the business office as well, and the Astros lose again last night. We got a lot to get to in headlines, and we got stuff from around the NFL as well. We'll rapid fire all of it coming up next.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, it is headline time, 6:45 in the morning, and we are at Texans training camp, and we are live. Nick Caserio going to join us in about 45 minutes or so live out here, 7:30. Be listening for that. Day five yesterday, first string offense cooked in the red zone drills, as we just got done talking about. Offense looked really good, looked completely different than they did on Monday when they seemed out of sync. Nico Collins with a veteran day off yesterday. You know, you could tell he had a veteran's day off, Seth. A, he was out here. He wasn't in the building with a lot of the guys who are banged up right now just don't even come out to the practice facility. B, he was wearing a jersey of his own jersey. I feel like if you were hurt, might be a little less lighthearted about your absence. I thought it was funny that he was wearing his own shirt.
He looks like a fan of Nico Collins.
He did. I was joking on my podcast yesterday. I said, I'd like to envision Nico actually not having that shirt in his closet, but he ran to the team store right before practice, and they're like, sir, you are a big Nico Collins fan, aren't you?
They could do one of those little bits where he sells Nico Collins jerseys to people. Problem is, he's so big that I don't. People get onto that. It's better when you do it with a guy like Danny Amendola or something, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that with Nico, Nico has been. He's one of these guys that through that whole process of getting a new contract, he said all the right things publicly. He, you know, told on that TJ Houshmandzadeh podcast, said he just flat out wasn't thinking about it at all. Didn't put anything out on social media. I think he's got the humility of having had a rough go of it the first couple seasons.
No doubt.
And of having seen the other side of it, that he's one of the guys, especially because it's a relatively short-term extension that he signed, that he's already, you know, it looked too lofty at first, but as we expected, he's already, you know, getting pushed down. It's not like he's one of the highest paid receivers in the league anymore.
He's heading towards bargain status.
Yeah. So I think it feels good that he's just a guy that's very workmanlike in his approach. I don't think he's ever going to be the guy, this jersey aside, that's going to have, you know, be wearing t-shirts with his own
I think he was doing it ironically probably. So here was D'Amico, though. He was asked about that, like, is this going to be a thing now with getting guys some rest and managing them throughout camp?
Every player is different. Every player is on their own schedule. It's all about us making sure we're taking care of guys and being smart about how we're loading guys. So our sports performance group has done a great job with that load management, making sure we're on top of everything. You know, we track a lot of data, right? Use a lot of analytics when it comes to players and, you know, TPS units and things that we're tracking. So we try to keep a good. We know where our guys are. So you'll see periodically different guys who are in, guys that are limited at practice, just to make sure we're doing everything possible from our end to protect guys to keep them fresh.
There's a really cool parallel you can draw between D'Amico Ryans and Jeff Luhnow. And, like, obviously a whole lot of differences as well, different sports, different personalities, whatever. But the fact that Luhnow was a player who was playing as analytics was becoming the thing.
You're thinking of A.J. Hinch.
Yes, A.J. Hinch. Yeah. Excuse me. Thank you, Sean.
No problem.
What the hell would I do without you? My God, people are probably so confused right there. So
I was waiting for the Luhnow-D'Amico comparison.
Why did you not correct me?
Because I thought you might have meant Luhnow. So you said he as a player. Is
right.
Where, yeah.
Luno probably, he played in high school, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So A.J. Hinch as a player, you know, was playing well. Analytics were becoming a thing. And, you know, he spent, A.J. Hinch actually spent some time in the front office too. But he's acquainted with both worlds. And I think that was one of the values of having A.J. Hinch as your manager, was he is a guy who embraced what the front office was doing, but he could still relate to the players as a former player.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really good blend for what that team needed. I think with D'Amico, look, he started off in 2006 where, you know, he was with a coach in Gary Kubiak that came from that Bill Walsh line where they weren't trying to physically batter you in practice. They were a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of all of that. But, you know, we had a lot more two-a-days. There was a lot more old-school NFL. And then as a player, he transitioned into when people started wearing GPS units and everything. And so I don't think he's not a grudging participant in some of the load management stuff.
Right.
I think he sees the value in it.
Well, I think a tip of the cap, too, to Chip Kelly, who D'Amico played for in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
When D'Amico did his introductory press conference, he listed all the coaches he played for and what he pulled from each of them. I think there were probably some people surprised he named Chip Kelly because
right.
it didn't end well for Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. But D'Amico said Chip Kelly was the guy that he saw how he was an innovator
He really was at the cutting edge in terms of NFL teams when they started doing a lot of stuff that like European sports have been doing for a long time of really paying a lot of attention to the sports science side of things. The one objection I have to that is that just in general, Chip Kelly's offenses are just awful for the defense. Those defensive, every defense he had in the NFL was like in the top three of snaps played.
Yeah.
And guys would just get worn down by the end of the year. But other than that, yes, I'll credit Chip Kelly.
There you go. Season tickets sold out for the Texans for the first time since 2019. So that was good to see. Let's flip to the Astros here because we got a lot of headlines we got to hit here. Astros lose 8-2 last night to the Oakland A's. Tough one for Jake Bloss in his, I believe, third career start, major league start, and just gave up a bunch of home runs, and as Joe Espada said after the game, just couldn't put guys away.
You know what? He got ahead of hitters, threw a ton of strikes, just had a little tough time putting guys away. I think that was the, you know, the whole thing about Jake today, but, you know, stuff looked pretty good. Just needed to execute when, you know, two strikes.
Yeah. I mean, I think these last couple of games have been a very appropriate, stark, and well-timed reminder that Dana Brown needs to do something between now and next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Spencer Arrighetti a couple nights ago was not great. And then Jake Bloss last night. These are your fourth and fifth starters right now. It's not even a six-man rotation, and these guys are getting important starts in a pennant race right now.
These are guys that should still be down in AAA.
Both of them.
And you're watching the A's who have been actually brilliant offensively over the course of the last month. You might not realize that if you're checked out on, you know, watching these late games or what have you.
They beat the Phillies 18-3 a week ago.
Yeah, they've been really, really
eight
good.
Home runs.
They got this damn kid Lawrence where you look at the A's and they're coming up, the Lawrence Butler. They're starting to reap the benefits of having been a bad team for a few years. Like some of these Lawrence Butler's only been up for a couple of, I think, 5 weeks or so, and he's hitting the ball really well. Meanwhile, the Astros, it used to be like, oh, they got too many guys in AAA that it could be up here now. What are we going to do with them?
Right.
It's like, okay, well, no, we got to elevate these guys quickly. I had a flashback to 2014 because I'm sitting there complaining about Gary Pettis sending Alex Bregman home.
Oh, back
not,
when that
not
was
that it would have been Bregman.
No.
Do you remember when the Astros first started being aggressive in their base running?
Yes, I do.
And Bregman got thrown at home by a great throw by Butler.
Yeah.
And they're losing to the A's.
That was a tone setter in that game last night, man. That was the first inning.
Obviously, it wouldn't have been Bregman.
But Pettis would have been. He would have been windmilling somebody home back then. Our baseball talk presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile. You get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at t-mobile.com/switch. Other things going on in the NFL as we wrap up headlines here for the next couple of minutes. Discussions have reportedly begun at a, quote, high level on an 18-game regular season schedule. So this sounds like something that the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, is not set to expire until, I believe, after the 2030 season.
Yeah.
But this sounds like something that both sides are willing to open up the books for, to the owners obviously wanting the 18th regular season game because of the moolah. But the players wanting to use this as an opportunity, they figure this 18th regular season game is a chance for them to engage the owners about like six other things.
You're right.
You know
right,
what I mean? Yeah. Like, fine, you get the 18th game, but we don't want OTAs anymore. We want another bye week. We want this. We want that.
Yeah,
you know, et cetera.
And the NFL owners continue to position themselves in a place where they can grudgingly give away a bunch of stuff that they don't actually care about.
Right.
So the
good acting job.
It does.
By
it
them.
Really feels like yeah. It. Sometimes it feels when the NFL is negotiating with the players, it's kind of like, well, I'd love to give you this rusty penny for that dollar bill, but I really love this rusty penny.
I love this penny.
The other thing, though, too, is that, like, at the end of the day, the players are getting more money, too.
For sure.
Whenever a player gets up and says, like, it's a cash grab, I'm like, I know, and you guys get half of that. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a cash grab.
It's really, it's not like they're taking all this new money and you're getting none of it.
No. Other NFL headlines, it's expected that CeeDee Lamb is going to hold out, not hold in, with the Dallas Cowboys. So he's reportedly, as the Cowboys open camp, not going to be there.
Yeah.
Christian Darrisaw signs a huge deal, the left tackle for the Minnesota Vikings. I believe left tackle for the Minnesota Vikings is getting 4 years, $113 million. I'm looking right now, Seth, to see if Laramie Tunsil has tweeted about it yet.
He has not.
Yeah. Darrisaw became the highest paid left tackle in all of football yesterday. So that's something Laramie keeps an eye on. And rightfully so.
A lot of these, they signed a lot of veterans in the offseason that really seem to care about practicing and like being out there and everything.
Yeah. Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Laramie Tunsil, by the way, has not practiced yet. So
he has not.
He'll show up eventually, everybody.
He's been out here. He's been on this field right here with a big, gigantic ball, just doing his thing, tossing a ball around.
It's a medicine ball, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it's. Yes, I think it's a medicine ball, gigantic medicine ball. All right, those are your headlines as we get you ready for Texans training camp day six. Nick Caserio joins us at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. Stay there for that. Up next, though, is the AFC South, the division itself, the reason the Texans could make a Super Bowl run. One national pundit says, absolutely. We'll let you hear that and see if you think he's correct. That's coming up next.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a great day to venture out in a spacious and capable Toyota SUV, like the new RAV4. With available all-wheel drive, it can go just about anywhere. And with plenty of passenger and cargo space, you'll go from morning carpool to weekend road trip without missing a beat. Plus, with available features like wireless charging and a touchscreen interface, your Toyota RAV4 will keep you connected no matter where you're going. Or check out a spacious Highlander. With seating for up to 8, it's a hub for family adventure. You'll drive in comfort and style with available heated and ventilated seats and all the latest tech. And with available hybrid models, your new Highlander can save you tons on gas. Right now, your local Toyota dealer has more vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day. So don't wait. Buy a RAV4 or Highlander today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals and more. Toyota, let's go places.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.